Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Now, streaming live on the Marijuana Agenda.
Oh, gnarly. What are you people? On dope?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio.
Hey, this is great, man.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
Marijuana is listed as a Schedule I drug. That is absurd.
Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Hey, man. Am I driving okay?
Toker Talk Radio is your chance to make your voice heard in the marijuana nation.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
Send that message with clarity that good people don't smoke marijuana.
Now let's get to Toking and Talking with your host, Russ Belville.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Glad to have you here. It's time for Toker Talk Radio, and my God, did Kevin Sabet step in it this time? Trying to brag about the Rohrabacher Farm Amendment having not yet been added to the appropriations bill. He's trying to say it's gotten stripped from the appropriations bill. No, it just has not yet been added. It's amazing the straws that he is trying to grasp at in his attempt to remain, you know, relevant and have any sort of sway over what people think about marijuana these days. There's so much that he has been trying to pump these days, you know, faced with loss after loss after loss after loss. The guy in the time since Project Sam has been formed, like January 2013, there's been dozens, like I think it's like 32 now, 32 national polls that have shown majority support for marijuana legalization. And only one, I believe, that saw plurality opposition. So the guy's like 32 or 31 and 1, something like that, over the past 3-4 years. Or 1 and 31, we should say. He's 1-1 and lost 31. If your college football team's quarterback was 1 and 31 after 4 seasons, I don't think he'd go very far in the draft. There's so much he's trying to say here. For example, on June 22nd, he tweeted out, "Today, big marijuana lost their bank account and Vermont of all places. What was that about? Inevitable?" And what he meant by the bank account part was that MPP lost PNC Bank as their banker. That wasn't anything that Kevin Sabet did. That wasn't anything that was the United States or the people of the United States thinking marijuana was a bad thing. That's just the election of Donald Trump and Jeff Sessions making a bunch of scary statements about cracking down on marijuana. That's all that is. And Vermont? We haven't lost Vermont. I love that he's trying to brag that he somehow lost, that he somehow had this massive victory by forestalling legalization in Vermont. Everybody knows Vermont's going to be legal next year. The House has passed a bill. The Senate passed a bill. The two of them reconciled their bill. The governor agreed with the reconciliation of the bill. The only thing they couldn't pull off is getting the Republicans to agree to vote on that during the 2-day short session. That's it. And then they just said, look, we can't do it this short session. We're dealing with the budget. We'll take care of this in January. So legalization's a done deal for Vermont, Kevin Sabet. It's just been put off for a little bit. So crow about that all you like, because I'll be glad to retweet those tweets after Vermont becomes legal in January. He also crowed about this piece in The Hill, saying it was a big win in Vermont. And he puts up a scoreboard where he says legalization wins in 2017, 0. Losses, Vermont, Connecticut, Maryland, New Hampshire, New Mexico, Delaware, and Rhode Island soon. Well, here's the thing, Kevin. Vermont's not a loss. It's going into overtime, and we're going to win that one. Connecticut, Maryland are not losses. Maryland, I believe, just recently passed a bill expanding its medical cannabis law. New Hampshire just did that, expanded its medical cannabis law, and established a better decriminalization law. New Mexico, I believe, has expanded its law. Delaware and Rhode Island. Rhode Island's going to pass legalization. They've currently passed a study committee bill, and they'll probably get around to legalizing in the next session. And don't forget, we got medical marijuana in West Virginia and Indiana. Nobody was expecting West Virginia. And Indiana was doubtful as well. So he's not even winning by his own standards here. It's pretty sad what it's come down to for poor Kevin Sabet, the Chicken Little, who the boy who cried wolf, the boy who cried stoners. So I thought, you know, Kevin Sabet, given that he didn't understand what the amendment process was all about, when we're talking about bills in Congress, I thought maybe he could use just a little bit of help understanding how that all works. So when we come back from break, we got a special video for Kevin. So maybe he can get some education. And we'll also talk a little bit more about what's going on in the wide world of marijuana. But before we get to that, we'll have that toward the end of the show. When we come back, we got a special bonus radical rant about some dog-killing cops in Detroit. I'm not going to be happy about this one.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Putting together the most comprehensive live weekday marijuana news talk program is a full-time job. Now you can do your part to ensure that listener-supported independent cannabis radio journalism can continue by becoming a patron of The Marijuana Agenda. Just log on to mjagenda.com and click the Become a Patron button. For your $4.20 monthly donation, you'll receive over 20 hours of original first-hour podcasts plus other materials only available to paid subscribers. Or for just $9.99 a month, become a VIP patron. You'll get over 40 hours of podcasts for the complete program, including Toker Talk Radio, plus ad-free downloads of the segments heard on The Marijuana Agenda. Plus, VIPs get exclusive access to the video replay of the two-hour live stream show and downloads of the spreadsheets and charts I provide from my years of curating marijuana data sets. Thank you for your support, and remember, I cannot do it without you. Please become a patron today at mjagenda.com.
It's time for Cannabis Facts about Teen Drug Use from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
You're not high. You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
It's not recreational. It can be destructive, and it consistently is destructive.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the Celebrity Marijuana Zone with Steve Bloom from celebstoner.com. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Total war against public enemy public number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill. That was the point.
I think it would be a mistake to leave a state.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana.
Marijuana.
Radical rant.
CJ Ciramella has an amazing story up at reason.com. I encourage you all to check it out. I will post the link in our chat room, and you should share this far and wide. It's called Detroit Police Sued Again for Shooting Dogs During a Marijuana Raid. Two Detroit residents filed a civil rights lawsuit against the Detroit Police Department Wednesday, alleging that several police officers needlessly and maliciously shot their three dogs during a marijuana raid. Kenneth Savage and Ashley Franklin say that on July 22nd, 2016, Detroit police raided their house and found the dogs in a backyard bounded by an 8-foot-tall fence. The officers refused to let Savage and Franklin retrieve the dogs and instead shot them. The reason? Officers found several potted marijuana plants in the backyard. Savage and Franklin contend were there legally. Remember, Michigan's a medical marijuana state, folks. The suit is now the third active civil rights action against the Detroit Police Department for killing dogs during marijuana raids. A Reason investigation last year found that the Detroit Police Department's Major Violators Unit, which conducts hundreds of drug raids a year in the city, had a nasty habit of leaving dead dogs in its wake. One officer had killed 69 dogs over the course of his career, public records obtained by Reason showed. According to a search warrant affidavit, a Detroit police officer, while investigating an unrelated matter, observed several marijuana plants outdoors at the home of Savage, Franklin, and their son. 2 days later, 8 Detroit police officers arrived at the house. Police were aware Savage and Franklin had a permit to grow medical marijuana, but the plants were in violation because they were visible outside, the search warrant affidavit said. So these cops knew these people were medical marijuana patients. They knew these people had a right to cultivate cannabis. But for a technical violation of being able to see plants in their backyard behind an 8-foot fence, these cops decided they needed to raid these people. They needed to break down their doors. They needed to violate their privacy and most egregiously terrorize these people by killing their dogs. Here's where the story gets obscene. When Franklin showed police her marijuana paperwork and demanded to see a search warrant, an officer responded, quote, "If you keep asking for a warrant, we are going to kill these dogs and call Child Protective Services to pick up your kid," end quote. That is a Detroit police officer threatening someone, making a terroristic threat of death and separation of family for daring to assert her Fourth Amendment rights. Officers detained Franklin and searched the house, but could not get to the marijuana plants because of the dogs. They initially called animal control, but decided to destroy the animals, the lawsuit says. They even had animal control on the way to get the dogs out of the way for the cops to deal with the horrific, heinous, indescribable crime of growing medical marijuana plants behind an 8-foot fence in the backyard. Officers shot and killed one dog through the fence, broke into the backyard enclosure, and fatally shot the other two. Animal control arrived 10 minutes later. Now, was there a fear that these marijuana plants were going to up and run away if we didn't get there right away, get there back there right away and get a hold of them plants, kill them dogs right now? Those plants might just disappear. No, of course not. This was just some cruel, despicable bastards who think of marijuana users as less than human and delight in terrorizing and torturing us emotionally, physically, financially, legally. The lawsuit says, quote, "At no time did City of Detroit police officers give plaintiffs an opportunity to sequester the dogs to permit them to access the backyard where the subject marijuana was located. Plaintiff Franklin offered to take the marijuana from the backyard and give it to the police, but defendant police officers refused," end quote. Because the dogs presented no imminent threat to officers and were secured behind a fence, the lawsuit contends their killing violated Savage and Franklin's Fourth Amendment rights against unreasonable search and seizure. They are seeking compensatory and punitive damages as well as attorney fees for what they say are the Detroit Police Department's reckless actions and callous indifference to their rights. The Reason story continues. Last year, the city of Detroit approved a $100,000 settlement to a man after police shot his dog while it was securely chained to a fence. Michigan attorney Chris Olson, representing Savage and Franklin, is also representing Nikita Smith, who is suing police department, suing the Detroit Police Department for shooting her three dogs while executing a search warrant for suspected marijuana sales. A judge dismissed criminal charges against Smith when officers failed to appear at her court hearing. So her marijuana sales were such a terrible crime that those dogs had to be killed. But not such a terrible crime that the cops had to take some time off during the day and go to court to actually prove she had committed the crime of selling weed. The Detroit Police Department did not immediately respond to a request by Reason for comment. However, in an interview this March with a local news channel, Detroit Police Assistant Chief James White defended the department from charges that it is needlessly shooting dogs, saying, quote, "This isn't Fluffy the family pet in many instances. Door comes off the hinges. There's pandemonium. People are running. Perpetrator, in many instances, has a weapon himself, can start shooting. Sometimes the dog is used as a tactic to get the advantage over the officers, and I just don't think it would be acceptable to an officer to put their life at risk to try to stop a dog from attacking during a drug raid." End quote. These people were medical marijuana patients. You knew they were medical marijuana patients. They were growing plants in the backyard behind a fence. You had no evidence or probable cause to believe they were massive drug dealers, they were selling, they were diverting, nothing. All you had was a technical violation of being able to visibly see the plants in their back private backyard. As Reason writes, quote, "No officers' lives were at risk. Franklin had already been detained, and animal control was already on its way. If a jury agrees with those facts, the city of Detroit might face another costly settlement." Now, I have a couple of other issues with this. Number one, it's not the cops that get punished for this. It's the taxpayers of the city of Detroit. It's the city that ends up paying that $100,000 out, not the cops. Cops ought to be personally liable in these cases of excessive and needless cruelty. Bankrupt them. Take their cars. Take their houses. Do to them what they use asset forfeiture to do to us. Take their stuff. Doesn't bring the dog back, but at least it serves some measure of justice. And the other angle on this that's disturbing, you know, in this case, we talked about the city of Detroit, you know, giving out a $100,000 settlement, right? But there was another case I was reading about recently out of Anne Arundel County, Maryland, I want to say. I think it's Maryland. Where people got a $1.26 million settlement for the vicious killing of their dogs by law enforcement. And again, that's a settlement that doesn't come out of the cop's pocket, comes out of the city's pocket. People end up having to pay for that, not the cop. But what was, and if it was the cop that was paying, and hell, I'm all for a $1.26 million settlement. That's fine. Whatever the number is great if the cop's paying for it. But what's disturbing about the city having to pay that, or the county, I guess it is in Maryland, $1.26 million, is that the family of Michael Brown was killed by law enforcement officers. Their settlement was $1.5 million. So if the settlement for a dog is $1.26 million, don't you think a human life ought to be more than 19% greater than that? I mean, yeah, it's great to hear Black Lives Matter, but they ought to matter a little more than someone's family dog, ask me. This is really just domestic terrorism, folks. It's domestic terrorism.
We're on a mission from God.
All right, folks, that time, that sound means the time is 4:20 here in the Pacific time zone. Maybe I don't need a safety meeting. I might have already caught up. We'll be right back with some pleading news for the Seattle Hemp Fest. And, of course, at the end of the show, a special video for our friend Kevin Sabet. Stick around.
If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
Georgia. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
You're not high. You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
We need to say, as Nancy Reagan said, just say no. Don't do it. There's no excuse for this.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
I'm Russ Belville with The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for The Marijuana Policy Insider with Marijuana Policy Project. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Shanna, your Hector David.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Hope you had a great safety meeting. So, sad news coming out of the Pacific Northwest here. Although it's not sad yet, but it's scary. And that is the future of the Seattle Hemp Fest. You know, Seattle Hemp Fest has been going on for 26 years now. And every year, it's always a financial struggle to keep it afloat. But this year, it's really starting to stick. They're really having to kick down, you know, cut a couple of the stages out, reduce some of their expenses. And the folks at Seattle Hemp Fest, Viv McPeak and all the great volunteers there, are dedicated to putting this on. It'll be on this year. And again, it's third weekend of August every year. But it's going to be at a somewhat reduced Seattle Hemp Fest. And that's sad to see. I always tell people that as a dedicated marijuana activist, you should plan a visit to Seattle Hemp Fest, at least one of them. You should do this like Muslims make a pilgrimage to Mecca, right? Like NFL fans want to go see a Super Bowl, right? This is your big event. There's nothing bigger than the Seattle Hemp Fest. And I'm not talking about bigger of just pot events. Seattle Hemp Fest is the longest continually occurring largest political protest in the world. They draw anywhere from 100,000 to 150,000 people a day in that park. It's 1.6 miles of park that they've got cordoned off for a free speech event. All these stages throughout and great bands playing and speakers talking. And, you know, full disclosure, I've been speaking at the Seattle Hemp Fest since 2006, I think, 2006 or seven. So this might be my 11th, 12th year that I've been going up there to speak. It is something that completely changes your worldview when you're there. especially if you come from a very prohibition state. Like, I came from Idaho and went to the Seattle Hemp Fest just as a visitor in 2004 and was just stunned to be surrounded by tens of thousands of my fellow tokers openly smoking weed, openly selling pipes and all the t-shirts and accoutrement you could want for marijuana. Well, you better get to it, because who knows if Seattle Hemp Fest is going to continue. And it's kind of a there's a strange sort of, you know, karma going on here as well. Of course, Washington State has legal marijuana, but Hemp Fest didn't help that happen directly. Now, HempFest did have a lot to do with changing people's minds, changing people's attitudes, getting I-75 passed, which was the original Seattle lowest law enforcement priority for cops. You know, bust everybody else and then you can bust the stoners. That happened in Seattle way back in the 90s. And sure, yeah, of course, Seattle HempFest helped to contribute to that, helped to contribute to the medical marijuana initiative getting passed, helped to change people's minds, change people's attitudes. But when the rubber met the road, when push came to shove, when it was time to support the first legitimate shot at marijuana legalization in Washington State, Seattle Hemp Fest was neutral. Seattle Hemp Fest stood on the sidelines. Seattle Hemp Fest was about a 50-50 split among its core organizers as to whether or not to support the ending of arresting people for possessing weed and allowing there to be legalized sales of weed. They were neutral. I was there at that Seattle Hemp Fest in 2012, and it was a completely different vibe than every other Hemp Fest. Every other Hemp Fest is love and caring and sharing and hippy-dippy ethos. But that 2012, there were the red t-shirted no on I-502 people and the speakers who were vehemently decrying 502 and saying terrible things about its organizers and questioning their motives and decrying 502 as the worst thing ever for marijuana. So now marijuana is legal. And there are people, and I'm not among them, but there are people who see Seattle Hemp Fest suffering, losing some of its money, not getting as much donations as it need. And there are some people that say, hey, instant karma is going to get you, baby. You didn't stand up when it was important. You didn't stand up and vocally before legalization. You somewhat enabled our opponents by being the biggest, highest profile marijuana event in the world, remaining neutral on legalization. And I know people will say, well, you know, neutral, that might have been the best shot. Politically speaking, you couldn't piss off one side or the other. But I disagree. I think in times of legalization, in times of political tests like that, you've got to pick a side. You got to be for it or against it, because neutrality in that context might as well be opposition. It's like saying you're neutral on the issue of whether creationism or evolution is true. No, there's no neutral. There's no, well, both sides have a good point. There is evolution, which is true and scientifically verifiable, and then there's creation, which is myth and religion. And if you're one of those that say, well, we need to hear both sides, you're helping their side because their side doesn't have a leg to stand on. The same thing goes when it comes to marijuana legalization and trying to remain neutral on it. There is no neutral on legalization. You're either helping to stop people from being harassed, arrested, and imprisoned over marijuana, or you're helping to maintain the status quo. Neutrality helps the status quo. Now, I am not one to see Seattle Hemp Fest end, and I'm not one that is blaming karma or saying there's any dessert, that it's just desserts for Seattle Hemp Fest. I don't think that at all, because again, it was like a 50-50 split. The other half were strongly for I-502. I don't want to see Seattle Hemp Fest die. And it's sad because so many people attend this thing and they can't charge admission for it because it's a free speech event. And if it's a free speech event, you can't charge admission. If they did charge admission, then it's a commercial event, and then the city, which has for years tried to deny them a permit, has a better shot at doing that. Because a free speech event, you deny the permit, you're curbing speech. But a commercial event, you deny the permit, it's not the same thing. You got more of a leg to stand on when you're the opposition in that case. So they can't charge admission, but they do have donation boxes at the entrance of Seattle Hemp Fest and at all the stages and people wandering around calling for donations. And if they just got $1 off of every person that attends Seattle Hemp Fest, we wouldn't have this discussion every year. But they'd be flush with cash. But as it is, they end up getting, what is it, 40 cents, 46 cents per attendee on average. As Vivian McPeak says, I don't care how bad the economy is, people can afford $5 for the weekend. Especially with the way prices are so low in Washington State, you can save a lot of money on your weed and put that toward your HempFest donation. But as they this is a story has been written in thestranger.com. It's by Lester Black. It's entitled HempFest is Fighting for Its Future. And in the story, he alludes to these people that have the issue with HempFest neutrality. He says, quote, "The public, of course, disagreed with McPeak and decided that I-502 was the right way to legalize weed. A friend who attended that year's festival told me he remembers the rampant anti-I-502 messaging being off-putting. Nevertheless, even if HempFest didn't fully support the legislation that ultimately legalized weed in our state, their work for more than 26 years establishing the groundwork and context for legalization deserves to be recognized." Exactly. So we'll see. I'll be there at the Seattle Hemp Fest. I'll have all of the my speaking times. I'll make sure we post that on the website. They are cutting down on a few of the stages, and there is suggestion that the upcoming, you know, future Seattle Hemp Fest could be much smaller. Let's let this continue. Let's donate to this. Let's get out there to Seattle Hemp Fest. And remember that this gathering is still important. They still don't have home grow rights in Washington State. They still lock people up for growing a houseplant. That's got to end. And that was part of why a lot of the people didn't initially endorse I-502 in the first place as well. It didn't legalize home grow. And they also had a complaint with the per se DUID, 5 nanogram per se DUID. That's completely unscientific, unjust, illogical, cruel. It was indeed a flawed legalization plan, no doubt about it. But no flaw stands out greater than the enormous, life-wrecking, country-destroying, police-corrupting, drug-ruining flaw that is prohibition. You just can't, they're not even close. When your choice is end prohibition imperfectly or keep prohibition, you choose end prohibition imperfectly. And that's why Seattle Hemp Fest needs to continue. We still have to fight for that home grow right. We still have to fight to get impairment as the sole determinant of whether you're impaired, not some magic number on a chart. We still need to fight for the right of you and me and everyone in Washington State who legally consumes cannabis to be able to still go to work, to still have a job, to not lose everything, your job, your home, your freedom, your stuff, simply because you're a cannabis consumer. And of course, Washington State, we still need a place to toke. Washington State's the only state of all of the legalized states so far that has felonized cannabis clubs. They're going in the opposite direction as everyone else. Everyone else is kind of like slowly moving toward it. How can we make it happen? Washington State went and felonized it. What sort of mindset imagines that a room full of marijuana smokers enjoying each other's company is felonious, is something on par with kidnapping and robbery and assault and murder and rape? How does that even fit in felony land? It's insane. So please, if you can make a donation, even if you can't make it to Seattle Hemp Fest, make a donation to Seattle Hemp Fest. You can find them at hempfest.org. They could use all the help you can send them. We owe them a lot. We owe, if anything, do it for Vivian McPeak. We're going to take a break. We'll give you more from the wide world of weed when we return. And at the end of the show, we got a special video for our friend Kevin Sabet.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
This November, whether you see the words medical marijuana on your ballot or not, the issue is there. From the halls of Congress to your state capitol or city hall, politicians are already making decisions on medical marijuana policy on your behalf. This election, make sure they are representing you. Every vote is a vote for medical marijuana.
Visit votemedicalmarijuana.org today.
You're not high. You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
We've turned the corner on drug addiction in the United States. Drug addiction in the United States is under control.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
I'm Russ Belville with The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for Police for Reform with Law Enforcement Action Partnership. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
I have a package here for Radical Rick. Is there a Radical Rick here? How about a Rick Russ? Any Rick Russ? Somebody named Freddie Farrakh has sent him a package? Anybody? What is that? Sounds like a skunk. It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Glad to have you here. All sorts of interesting things going on in the world of marijuana, and we encourage you to check out marijuanamoment.net. That's where I get my morning newsletter from Tom Angel, the founder of Marijuana Majority, and it's just amazing how much is in this newsletter. Everything you could possibly want to know, bringing back Ed McMahon, everything you'd want to know is in this newsletter. Boy, I'm dating myself with the reference, but kids, Ed McMahon was a talk show sidekick. Anyway, there's a new report out from the, missing the spot. There it is. Okay. Let me get to this study instead. I'm not getting the information I was looking for. A Georgia State University study says that marijuana use can lead to metabolic syndrome. This is the School of Public Health at Georgia State. Says the longer a person uses marijuana, the more the risk increases for developing conditions linked to heart disease, stroke, and diabetes. The duration of marijuana use seems to be a significant factor for metabolic syndrome, which increases risk for heart disease, stroke, and diabetes. Every year increase in marijuana use is associated with at least a 5% increase in the odds of having metabolic syndrome. Aha! A 5% increase every year. Well, let's see. I've been smoking marijuana since 1990. It's currently 2017, so that's 27 years. 5% each year, carry the 2, multiply. Yeah, I should be dead, right? I should be dead by now, I guess. I don't know what the original risk is and what raising it 5% compounded every year over 27 years results in. But yeah, I guess I should be dead. According to the report, it noted the most common form of marijuana consumption is smoking, but the original survey also asked participants who consumed edible marijuana products and hashish. While criteria for diagnosing metabolic syndrome are not settled, there are four commonly accepted signs of the disease: high blood pressure, high blood sugar, high concentrations of fat in the blood, and excess abdominal fat. Or in other words, being a middle-aged dude. I don't know, man. This is a pretty specious little study here. So many correlates involved that they're not factoring out. But it does bring up something I want to address. We talk a lot about these studies, and I've been recently in the news adding into the news some of the negative studies where they say it increases this risk or increases that risk or causes this or causes that. Oftentimes it's so we can bring it up with Dr. Mitch and talk about it and debunk it. But I've got another agenda with this, with talking about the harms that researchers are presenting about marijuana. And that agenda is for us to not jump to the defensive when it comes to marijuana legalization. I worry sometimes that we may overextend ourselves when we are, you know, proselytizing for marijuana legalization with, oh, you know, it's safer than alcohol and it'll reduce opioid deaths and it'll raise all this tax money and all the things that we say, which are generally true. But in the event that there's some cases where it's not true, we open up the door for our opponents to say, aha, see, those marijuana people lied. Those marijuana people exaggerated. Those marijuana people sold you a bill of goods. It was a bait and switch. We open ourselves up to this rhetorical risk of having defended and promoted our marijuana legalization based on some sort of objective gain. And when the measurement can be taken and that objective gain is either not reached or there's an actual loss, which again, I'm not saying is happening, but could, if we set ourselves up with that as our justification, then if we get bad news, it hurts our cause for legalization. And I bring this up because I worry and I want to counsel people that are activists and advocates for this issue not to put all your eggs in that basket. Don't put all your eggs in the tax basket or the reduced opiate deaths basket or any of these things. Because really, they're secondary and irrelevant. The issue here is, should we maintain the status quo of punishing adults for using and cultivating cannabis? And the answer is no, regardless of what effect not doing that has. We should end adult marijuana prohibition simply because it's wrong to lock people up and punish them over a houseplant, a non-toxic healing herb. And not only is it wrong, the government has no authority to do so. Now, I know the Supreme Court has said so under the Commerce Clause and some Wickard v. Filburn stuff from the 1940s having to do with wheat. But these are flawed Supreme Court decisions on par with Dred Scott. These are terrible Supreme Court decisions. Justice Clarence Thomas, who, believe me, I don't enjoy being on the same side with, but he got it right in his dissent in 2003 when he dissented from the Supreme Court's majority that said the Commerce Clause gave them the right, gave Congress the right, gave law enforcement the right to curtail someone growing and using marijuana intrastate. This was the case of Angel Rach, a California woman growing California marijuana from California seeds in California soil using California buckets and California shovels and California gloves on her California hands to smoke California weed into her California lungs. There wasn't a single interstate involved. No inter at all. All intrastate. And the Supreme Court said, well, yeah, we know that she's medical. She's not commercial. And we know that she's in state, not intrastate. And we know she's not engaged in any sort of commerce. However, theoretically, she could. She could take some of her medical marijuana and sell it in Wyoming. And there's no way to tell medical marijuana from recreational marijuana. There's no way to tell California marijuana from Wyoming marijuana. It's all fungible. You can't tell one from the other. So because it's theoretically possible that it could affect interstate commerce, even though that effect would be one woman with brain cancer selling an ounce here or there, and the effect on interstate commerce would be so minuscule as to be virtually undetectable, because it's all theoretically possible, the Commerce Clause allows the federal government to stop people from growing weed. And Justice Thomas dissented from that and said, look, if we rule that way, and I'm paraphrasing here, if we rule that way, then the Commerce Clause covers everything. The Commerce Clause could be used by the government to justify intrusion into any sphere of public use, cultivation, sales, growth of anything. But unfortunately, that's the way the Supreme Court decided. I believe that's a flawed decision. And I believe it's flawed for reasons that rarely get mentioned. I believe there is a personal privacy right, a personal cultivation right within our Constitution already. When the gay rights crusaders fought for same-sex marriage, their lawyers told them, we didn't need to pass a new law. We didn't need to repeal any laws. The Constitution already grants you the right, already recognizes the right of same-sex couples to marry. And that's the same situation right now. Our Constitution currently recognizes our right to cultivate cannabis and use it for our own personal purposes. And there's a number of ways it does. Number one, in our Declaration of Independence, says that our whole country was founded on the bedrock principles of protecting our inalienable rights. No government can give them or take them. They come to us from our Creator, whatever you perceive that to be. And among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Among these, there's a shit ton of them, but here's three: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Among these. Now, I know the Declaration of Independence doesn't carry legal weight. It can't be used, you know, as legal justification or precedent. But then we move on to our Constitution. To our Constitution, which was enacted to protect those inalienable rights again, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And they further cemented that by writing the Ninth Amendment, which a lot of people don't pay attention to. But the Ninth Amendment says, the enumeration in this Constitution of certain rights is not meant to deny or disparage others retained by the people. It's a real short one. It's like the Second Amendment. You can memorize the whole thing. And to translate that from colonial times, what that amendment means is, hey, we wrote down a bunch of rights, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom, you know, right to a speedy trial, right against cruel and unusual punishment, right to bear arms, no unreasonable search and seizures, can't incriminate yourself. We wrote down a bunch of rights, but that's not all your rights. Just because we wrote a bunch of them down, that's not a limiting list. The Ninth Amendment basically says that the list of rights in the Constitution is not an exclusive list. There are other rights we have that the Constitution didn't list. Now, before you think this is just some legal theory, some whack legal theory by some stoner, which I am, but still, understand this theory has already been proven. This is the reason why we have the right to use birth control, while no state can ban us from using birth control. It's why women have the right to abortion. Because in a series of decisions that included Griswold v. Connecticut and Roe v. Wade, the justices on the Supreme Court determined that there were these unenumerated rights, rights that weren't listed in the Constitution, and that there was a penumbra of rights, kind of an umbrella that covered our privacy rights, things like our right to freedom of speech, right to religion, Third Amendment to not have soldiers quartered in our homes, Fourth Amendment not to have unreasonable searches and seizures, and that these, and the Ninth Amendment too, was cited in Griswold case, and there's 13th and 14th Amendment considerations, but all these amendments taken together basically show us that the founders understood we had a basic right to privacy. Well, if the Ninth Amendment and the rest of that penumbra of rights allows a woman to do with her uterus what she so chooses, and any man or woman to control their own reproductive system, then by God, that's got to give us the same right to be able to cultivate the same flowers that our forefathers cultivated.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association and the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Federal prosecutors have been ordered to pursue the toughest possible sentences for criminal suspects. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions issued a memo May 10th rolling back Obama-era reforms that eased sentencing for some nonviolent drug offenders. Anthony Papa is the manager of media and artist relations for the Drug Policy Alliance. Papa says Sessions' reinstatement of harsher sentencing policies will destroy families because the breadwinners will be locked up for extensive periods of time.
Not only is going to put people with drug problems away that should be treated medically, not punitively, he's going to affect many family members of those that are being incarcerated.
The National Association of Assistant United States Attorneys says the policy will, quote, restore the tools that Congress intended to punish drug suspects. For United News International, I'm Neela Uni.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Cannabis Sports Medicine from the Gridiron Cannabis Coalition. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. What are you smoking there, boy?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Glad to have you here as we wind up our show this past couple hours on the Marijuana Agenda with a reminder. You can get the Cannabis Headline News podcast absolutely free. Check out news.mjagenda.com. That's news.mjagenda.com. All right. Earlier on the show, we talked about how Kevin Sabet called out victory for the most recent appropriations bill that's been for the Department of Justice. This is their budget. The draft bill has been submitted to the subcommittee, and Kevin Sabet crowed because the Rohrabacher Farr Amendment wasn't in it. Well, it's an amendment. It can't be put into the bill until after the bill has been submitted. Kevin Sabet got schooled on this, but apparently not schooled enough. So we decided here at the Marijuana Agenda that we would help Kevin with a little bit of education from our childhood.
Woo, you sure got to climb a lot of steps to get to this Capitol building here in Washington. Well, I wonder who that sad little scrap of paper is.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the capital city. It's a long, long wait while I'm sitting in committee. But I know I'll be a law someday. At least I hope and pray that I will. But today I am still just a bill.
Gee, Bill, you certainly have a lot of patience and courage.
Well, I got this far. When I started, I wasn't even a bill. I was just an idea. Some folks back home decided they wanted a law passed, so they called their local congressman, and he said, "You're right, there ought to be a law." Then he sat down and wrote me out and introduced me to Congress, and I became a bill. And I'll remain a bill until they decide to make me a law. I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I got as far as Capitol Hill. Well, now I'm stuck in committee, and I'll sit here and wait while a few key congressmen discuss and debate whether they should let me be a law. How I hope and pray that they will. But today I am still just a bill.
Listen to those congressmen arguing. Is all that discussion and debate about you?
Yeah, I'm one of the lucky ones. Most bills never even get this far. I hope they decide to report on me favorably, otherwise I may die.
Die?
Yeah, die in committee. Oh, but it looks like I'm going to live. Now I go to the House of Representatives and they vote on me.
If they vote yes, what happens?
Then I go to the Senate and the whole thing starts all over again.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And if they vote for me on Capitol Hill, well, then I'm off to the White House where I'll wait in a line with a lot of other bills for the president to sign. And if he signs me, then I'll be a law. How I hope and pray that he will. But today I am still just a bill.
You mean even if the whole Congress says you should be a law, the president can still say no?
Yes, that's called a veto. If the president vetoes me, I have to go back to Congress and they vote on me again, and by that time you're so old.
By that time, it's very unlikely that you become a law. It's not easy to become a law, is it?
No, but how I hope and pray that I will. But today, I am still just a bill.
He signed your bill, now you're a law.
Oh, yes!
Boy, you can't beat those old Schoolhouse Rock videos, man. There's nothing like that for kids today, is there? It's just a damn shame that so much that we picked up in the late 70s, as there was kind of this revival in education at the elementary level, at the middle school level, and there was this reinvestment in civics. We had Schoolhouse Rock, we had all sorts of bicentennial celebrations, and you know, I just think kids aren't taught that these days. They don't get any instruction in civics. And it's just, it's sad because there's so much, I think, that our public schools should instruct people on that is totally lacking, right? And of course I support, you know, the kids got to have math, kids got to have English and all of that. But do they really need to go as far as calculus in high school when they're not being taught how to fill out a tax return? Not taught how to run a checkbook, not taught what is the process of submitting laws and bills, how do elections work, what are your constitutional rights? Certainly we can sacrifice some credit somewhere in the graduation requirements and teach these kids how their government works. And I think when we don't have that, we foster this disdain for government. I can't tell you how many people I have to deal with, and I'm sure there's a few in the chat room that have the attitude that government is hopeless, it's hopelessly corrupt, there's nothing we can do. Anytime someone tells me that voting is useless and it doesn't matter and it's all under the control of the elite and it's hopeless, I light a joint of legal weed and say, tell me more. Tell me more about how voting doesn't change anything while I'm smoking this weed for which voting is keeping me out of jail. Yes, it is corrupt. There's a lot of corruption. Yes, money speaks too much. Yes. But compared to almost the rest of the world, we got it pretty good in how much control the people have over our politics. It's that we've been taught to think we have no control. It's that we haven't been taught how to run the levers of our democracy, how to control precincts, how to deal with campaigns and elections. And that's by design, folks. That's by design. I could talk about this some more, but that's all the time we got. Time flies when you legalize. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other,
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
You take a seat, you manage, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seat, you manage, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!